Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
UFC Vegas 31 is in the books. Let's hit that intro. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Five Rounds here on the Radio Techers channel. I am Mags, and with me, as always, my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm not doing too bad, how's yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Absolutely knackered. It's been a long-ass day today. But UFC Vegas 31 is in the books. It's all done and dusted. Let's quickly go through these prelims, and we'll get to the main card. So we started the night in their weight division with Rodrigo Ferreira getting the second round KO of Alan Badeau, and then Francisco Figueiredo lost via decision. That's Davidson Figueiredo's older brother. He lost to Malcolm Gordon. Then Sergey Morozov beat Kelly Tahar by decision in the bantamweight. Amanda Lemos got a 35-second knockout of Montserrat Ruiz, which was absolutely brutal. And then we've ended the prelims with another first-round knockout, this time Daniel Rodriguez scoring the victory over Preston Parsons. So going into the main card, we started with Gabriel Benitez taking on Billy Q, Billy Quarantillo, and this was a dominant victory by Billy Q. First round started quite a little bit nervous. Billy was throwing leg kicks. Benitez started with head kicks. But once Billy and Benitez started throwing shots at each other, there was a big right by Billy Q. He floors Benitez, follows up. Benitez threatens to go for the armbar. But Quarantillo is able to pass and get back into a scramble, get that body lock in, and he's going for the choke. Benitez does well to defend it, but he was just getting beat up on the ground. He finally gets free with about a minute to go, and you can see that it's took a lot of energy out of him. He takes a massive, massive deep breath. Billy goes to go for the leg again. But the round finishes. Similar kind of thing with the second round. Billy scores quick punches and then goes for the flying knee, gets the takedown, gets the back, starts the control again, the body lock again. Really, really good ground game. Benitez able to get back to his feet, but he's took a hell of a lot of punishment and his left eye is an absolute mess. Again, Billy goes for the takedown, gets it again. He's just able to drag Benitez to the floor pretty much as and when he wants to. At the end of that second round, we get a doctor check for the eye. He clears it, but it absolutely does look a mess. Third round, again, pretty much a lot of the same stuff. Billy takes it to the ground. Billy controls on the ground. The finish actually comes with Billy looking for a choke. Benitez not letting him lock it in. So from his back, he just punches the living shit out of Benitez and gets the stoppage from the bottom. Great finish and a great victory for Billy. Going into that fight actually as an underdog as well. But he was so dominant.
Well, that's it. Well, I can tell coming into the fight, I'm going to an underdog. Benavidez, he hits like a truck and he can take a punch. But what surprised me with Billy is when he knocked him down in the first round, I was surprised that he didn't capitalise and try and jump on him straight away and finish it. But then I were also, in a way, you know what, well done. Conserve your energy. You still got a dangerous guy from the end of the day. And he did. He took him to the third round. It's just Billy with that precision, with that eye and his. As soon as that second round and you see the eye swell up And then as soon as, like you said, the doctor basically saying to the referee, they can go on, but if he takes any more shots off, I'm going to call the fight off, let alone you. So the ref has already got it in his head. The physician's already told him, listen, your job is now, he gets any more shots into that eye, you stop the fight.
Yeah.
And instantly there's a fight. And if you're the opposite from your opponent and you overhear that from the physician saying that to the referee, you as a fighter, ching ching, I've won this fight. I know what I need to do now. I don't even need to go and try and knock him out. I don't need to try and go for a submission. I just need to try and make sure all my punches that I throw now land exactly to that eye. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Billy were doing. And to some extent, Benitez. For some reason, I had to fuck it up with Benitez in my head. Joseph. Mm-hmm. Benitez just...
Benavidez.
I'm tired, mate.
Yeah. I mean, it is nearly 6 o'clock in the morning, guys.
Benitez, you could just tell he didn't want any more of it. He didn't want any more of it. You could tell when he was on his back, he was doing the right thing by trying to put Billy's ankle when he's locking that body triangle up. That way. You've got an even fucking skeleton match, right? So when you're locking the body triangle, you generally want to go to the side which is their foot on to get that pressure, to release it. But it don't matter what Benitez was doing. He just couldn't get out of that position. He was fighting the hand off really well to try and stop the rear naked choke. But he was just taking punishment after punishment after punishment. He couldn't get out of it. Mm-hmm. And the only thing he could do was try and stop the hand. And then to the referee, when you're a fighter and you're doing that and you can't see, that to a referee does look
panic.
Panicking. That's just panic fighting. So he's also looking at that, thinking to himself, well, if you're not getting out of this, your eyes are already a mess. Now you panic throwing.
I'm going to stop it for your benefit.
And that's exactly what the referee did. And it were a perfect stoppage at the time. Could have happened sooner, could have happened later, but either way, Billy took that third round, saw the opportunity and absolutely took it. Mm-hmm. He knew the hour already beat up, so that was the winning point for him. As soon as he took him down, that was it. He was just hammer-fisting that eye, and the ref had to stop it. He couldn't defend himself at some point. I think after that, the third or fourth punch actually hit him on the ground. I think we were just letting him hit him at that point, like, fuck it, ref, just stop the fight.
It's a case of, I can't stop him doing it, so I might as well let him, and the ref will jump in.
Yeah.
So after that, we had Rodolfo Vieira taking on Dustin Stoltzfus. Interesting last name. I'm going to be definitely calling him Dustin. This fight was actually a really good stand-up fight for the first couple of rounds. Quite nervy in the beginning. Vieira, he wanted control of the centre of the cage. Early point where both were looking for those big, big shots. Vieira's movement, it seemed really well. He looked really comfortable. But Stoltzfus started landing some big shots. But then once Vieira returned them back, Stoltzfus' nose, it broke pretty much straight away. And you could see that was kind of like the eye for Benitez. It was going to be the target, and that's what Vieira landed time and time again, that jab to the nose. Going into the second, he concentrated a little bit more on going for the ground game, which I'm surprised, really, that he didn't go for in the first round, with him being really kind of technically gifted on the ground. But he gets the takedown in the beginning of the second, gets the slam. It's quickly stuffed, and we get back to the feet. But Vieira keeps that body lock on. Stoltzfus able to break it and get back to the middle of the octagon. But that jab was punishing Stoltzfus' nose all the way through the first and second round. Coming into the third down, Stovers knew he had to come out and finish this fight because he was two rounds down. He was getting beat up. Vieira ducked his punches, got the fight tucked to the ground, got to half guard. But Stovers was able to quickly get up, was then dragged back down, was kind of like almost Vieira was looking to take the back, but Stovers did a really cool quick transition, jumps out, got the back of Vieira, got the back of Stovers and was able to lock in that rear naked choke. We didn't get a tap because Stovers actually went fast asleep. After taking two rounds of punishment, Stovers had to go for broke in that third round and it cost him. And he had a good nap at the end of the third round.
Yeah. Now, obviously, I didn't know what Mark was saying at first. When I was watching the fight, generally I try not to listen to the commentators whilst watching the fight. But yeah, then
because you get that commentary bias.
Yeah, exactly. Like you get the commentary bias, but when they say some stuff, my ears will perk up. Like, what'd you say there? So I didn't know what he was. Did he miss weight, or was he just referring to the fact his last couple of fights, because he is wrestling based, he's gassed out a lot?
I don't believe he missed weight.
So I think that's what they were saying then, and it did make sense in the fight why he wasn't going for the takedowns in the first and the second to conserve that energy going into the third. But I also agree with Mark. If your strength is your wrestling, you use it, even though it's going to dwell on your gas tank initially, it's going to make you better. Because if you're doing it in your farts and in the gym, it should generally work. Mm-hmm. It's only shouldn't do it is if something's not taking place, like you're not doing the proper training or you're not being professional on different levels. You're not working out what you need to do on what day, your nutrition, your cardio. A lot of fighters miss running out, and just the straight cardio and the endurance part of it is a massive thing in mixed martial arts. But yeah, he were able to stand for the first two rounds, and his arms, I don't know how people like him make welterweight. Because he just looked
a tank.
He just looked like a middleweight. Yeah. He was just fighting. He might as well just start doing fucking catch weights in the UFC. But yeah, he was just so big. I guarantee I would weigh both of them two now. Not one of them weigh 170.
Oh no, definitely not. 190 minimum.
Mm. So his jab was just laser accurate, and he just absolutely smashed Dustin up. Mm-hmm. His nose was just plastered.
Flat. Yeah, it was flat.
Yeah. After the first jab, you'd have seen it sort of piss out, and the second one, it would just pop. It was just like, shit, how many more is he going to take of that? And you could tell in the second round, he didn't like it, because he was the first one to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't, obviously, as a wrestler, he didn't even have to sprawl. He just basically just moved, just fucking pivoted out of the way. Dustin could take him down, but yeah, it were a weird one for Dustin. You couldn't say to him that his game plan was shit. It just didn't work. He didn't have no head movement. That's why the jab was so effective on him.
Yeah.
And he was just after a while in the fight, he was basically just walking into the jab, and just his face was there for the open, so it was just jab all day. So once he figured out that I probably can't get past this jab, I'll try and shoot in. And when he shot in and he couldn't get a takedown, it's like, shit, he's the better fighter, yeah? Mm-hmm. And then he went into the third, and as we've seen, as
Vieira,
he's an absolute tank, and he were able to just, for such a big man, for him to just jump on someone's back like that and just position himself the way he did, and it was just smooth and fast. It was like a tiger just getting on your back. And once he had that choke in,
he transitioned like like a flyweight. Yeah. The speed of it.
Well, that's it. And generally, when you're like, that's what Bisping would be saying. That's, if you can do that fast, that should generally be your go-to thing. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't just be, right, I'll keep it for the last round just in case I need it. Because, well, in this fight, did it work perfectly for him, keeping it to that last round?
Yeah, because he broke down Dustin in the first two.
Using the jab perfectly, you were able to just keep him at bay and not take any punishment. But as you go on, you're not going to be able to stop everyone in the tracks just with a jab, because you're going to fight people who's got head movement. You're going to fight people who's like, try to throw that jab all you want, I'll counter it, slip its hand, and crack your own. So it's, you've got to sort of count your next step. And for his next fight, he's obviously going to think more of, right, well, my wrestling is my strong suit. I'm going to need to do that a lot more. But he definitely needs to work on his cardio. But for the actual way he was able to get the finish, and the respect as well that he's shown as well afterwards, when I think he was more looking for the tap, but Dustin, just as he let go, I think Justin went out, wakes up a couple of seconds later, like, oh shit, disorientated, what's gone on a bit. And Vera didn't try and push him off or move him or that. He just waited patiently for him to just get up, like, off him, said thank you, sorry, blah, 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 on to the next one. But yeah, clash performance by both of them. And both of them have definitely got work to do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So after that, we go into the middle of the card. Jeremy Stephens, this was his 33rd UFC fight, been with the company for, 15 years, I think, altogether. To be fair, maybe his last fight after this performance. He was going up against Mateus Gamrot. Gamrot started with an early left, got the single leg, dragged Jeremy Stephens to the ground, grabs the left arm, goes for the Kimura. Stephens really kind of struggling to get out of the position. Gamrot looked like he was going to switch to an armbar for a second, but he did stick with the Kimura. That was a good decision because he sinked it in, and Jeremy Stephens had no choice to tap. 1 minute, 5 seconds, and Gamrot scores a massive, massive victory.
Yeah, what can you say with Jeremy Stephens? He's an absolute legend. He's fought the who's who's who you could fight in the UFC, especially over his 10-plus years with the actual company. Mm-hmm. He's one of the fighters that has got more fights in the UFC than a lot of people. Like, a lot of fighters talk about that, like Bisping and them up there in the 20 club. That's a big thing for people in the UFC. So you've got to be on a different level to be in that 30 to 40 club. And that's what Jeremy Stephens is. And when I refer to that, meaning 20-plus fights, 30-plus fights in the UFC, they, like you said, what was this? His 33rd fight in the UFC. It's only like four or five behind Donald Cerrone. Mm-hmm. And I think he's at like 37, 40 fights, something like that, in the UFC. But it's just hard to say because it's hard to watch him lose. But then, again, it's also a good thing because it just goes to show that these younger guys are getting better.
Yeah.
They're moving up. They're watching the sport. They know who Jeremy Stephens is. And Jeremy Stephens can't beat him as easy as it was. Like, his pressure, what that he was known for. He was known as basically that tanky. In that first round, you need to stay away from him because he's going to try and knock you out.
Yeah.
Now people are just taking him down. Like we just saw in this fight. He got took down and he went for the Kimura. And this is the one thing I'm going to say now about the Kimura. Too many people commit to the Kimura because once you've committed to that Kimura and you don't get it, you put yourself in a worse position than you were in the first place. Your best bet is to just fucking let it go and kick and push off. If not, try and grapple back. Don't just try and grab hold of the arm, because if you're on the feet and you grab hold of the arm, you're probably going to get lifted up and slammed on your head like Rose did. And then like this now, if you go to the ground and you grab hold of the arm and you commit to it too much and you overcommit to it and you don't try and grapple with it and you don't try and set it up by wrapping your legs around your opponent's body and et cetera,
you're just putting yourself in a worse position than your opponents. To someone who should be on that skill level, I'd say I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but if someone was to do that with me, I'd let them do that because I know initially I'm going to be on top of them, yeah? I'm going to go inside control. I know where this is going. So, fuck it, carry on. And then before you know it, you're inside control, you've laid a couple of elbows in, and they've let go of your arm. And the next thing before you know it, you've got your own Kimura on them. And that's the way I'm explaining it is the way exactly as it happened in this fight. Because I've saw it time and time again in other fights, in sparring, in the gym. Just stuff that fighters commit to so much, and then it ends up coming back and biting them on the arse. And Jeremy Stephens did exactly that thing. And it's a rookie mistake. For someone who's a veteran, it was a very rookie mistake.
Mm-hmm. You talk about veterans, and that's a good segue into the co-main event. A veteran of UFC and Strikeforce, former champion Misha Tate, making her comeback after 4 and a bit years out of the game, taking on Marion Renault, 44 years old. Already said before the fact that this was going to be her last MMA fight. So yeah, it was this was going to be a big change of the guard, and Misha Tate has come back looking super strong. I think she looked in better shape than she's ever looked in the time that I remember seeing her. The first round, quite a nervy start, very patient between both of them. No one wanted to really kind of take that risk in losing the fight pretty early. Tate did a few low kicks. A couple of shots down the middle, but her movement and the way she was bouncing on her feet was really impressive. Renault tried to take down the lead leg, kind of that chop it down, but wasn't really able to do that much damage. We get a bit of a clinch up against the cage, knees swapped, body lock, then. Essentially, it's just a little bit of a jabbing contest. Gets the takedown coming up close to the end of the first round, controls the ankle, moves past the leg, runs out of time, comes into the second round. Renault starts much more aggressive, landed a massive front kick to start, and lands some shots after that. Again, we see Misha go for the takedown. Marion gets told by the referee about grabbing the cage. Then we get Tate lifting her up for a big slam. That was a heavy slam by Misha Tate, but gets into half guard. Again, Misha goes for the Kimura this time. It was Marion that went for the Kimura on Misha. Misha did exactly how you explained it earlier, using your body to kind of press down, prevent that submission, which makes Marion let that go. They then stand up. And then we see Misha get back on top of Marion, landing some big shots to end. See a little bit of blood from Marion Renault. Again, too late for Misha to really get a lot of offense in that position. Coming into the third, Misha was really kind of starting to push the pace now, landing a lot more punches. She gets Marion up against the cage and kind of like does almost like a Diego Sanchez blitzkrieg style. Marion essentially tries to scramble once Misha goes for another takedown, nearly gets a crucifix, but that gives Misha the opportunity to spin inside, start landing some shots. Marion's essentially trapped on the floor, face down. Misha's just firing shot after shot after shot. Not really heavy shots, I wouldn't have thought, but plenty of them that Mark Smith, he essentially did what he saw in the first fight. The one against Billy Quarantillo, he saw that the fight was taking damage and not really doing much to defend, so he stops the fight. And a great comeback victory for Misha Tate, looking to push on to get a title shot.
Definitely. Cupcake, welcome back. Now, I'm going to be harsh on you, because I love you too much not to be. 4 years coming back into the UFC, very impressive. Got no one without a doubt. No one can say that he's not impressive. Coming back to get a win like that. Now, people are already going to say your opponent was 40-odd. Your opponent was out. This was just a comeback fight. And to me, this is all it was. This was basically Dominic Cruz coming back to fight in that guy we fought. This was just a warm-up fight. I'm going to sound a bit like a dick here, but for me to be impressed, I want to see a fight, someone in the top five, a legitimate one. Because we, no disrespect to
Marion.
She was on her way out. She's known it for a good year. She said it herself too many times. Like Dana says, once you start mentioning retirement, you're probably best off just doing it. She didn't seem to want to be in there. She just seemed to like, this is my last fight, my last payday. Don't matter what happens, I'm going to get paid. I'm hanging my gloves up anyway. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of attitude I got from her, because she didn't really seem to be wanting to fight that much. She wasn't... That fire wasn't there. You can just tell if you want to... When you're a fighter and you want to be in there and you want something so bad, you can just tell how people are fighting, how they are. And it were hard for me to look at her and think, she wants this win. She wants to go out on a win. To me, she just wanted to go out. Mm-hmm. Don't matter how, just get out the game. She's had enough of it. She's done. She's agreed with it. Fair enough to her. Well done. That's one for what she has done in the sport, for how long she's been in the UFC. But for me, she to come back and be on form like that, wrestling was phenomenal, like it always has been. Her striking has got better, definitely better. But it's all right me seeing this now against a person, like I said, people are going to say your opponent's 40-odd, she was on her way out. So it's easy for me to say you've definitely got better when head movement was a problem. You got hit a couple of times and you didn't move out of the way. Now again, it's 4 years out, he's gonna do that to people. You're gonna take off little bits. Overall, it were a fantastic performance. But now I'd like to see Cupcake actually
test herself versus
someone who I know that she can. I know that she can test herself, but I knew she was going to win this fight. Simple as that. Like, she don't matter how long she was going to be out. She's just... Her name is Miesha Tate. She holds history in that bantamweight division in the UFC. She holds history with the names of Amanda Nunes, your Ronda Rouseys, your Holly Holmes. She's there. She's literally, in my opinion, one of your four horsewomen. She's literally your four big names. She's one of them in them ways. Taking away Rose and Weili Zhang and stuff like that. Just focus on the bantamweight upwards. They're your four biggest names. And one of them hasn't been in the UFC for 4 years. Miesha Tate, still the biggest name. Ronda Rousey, never coming back to the UFC. In WWE. Still the biggest women's name in mixed martial arts, and she doesn't even do mixed martial arts, she's fully retired. Holly Holm, probably the third biggest name, dropping off a bit. You've only got Amanda Nunes left. If Cupcake can do what she did tonight and keep that ball rolling after 4 years, because a lot of people have got to remember that's 4 years of her training, letting her body recover, not taking punishment to the head, so her brain's all there. She's not thinking clearly. So she has got potential to come back and challenge Amanda Nunes. But then you've got to look at it realistically. Amanda Nunes is an absolute beast. It's hard for the UFC to sell her now. It's hard for the UFC to even promote her because she's that good. She beats everyone how she wants to beat them. She wants to submit. She's going to submit her. She wants to knock you out. She's going to knock you out. So there's a reason why she's going to be the co-main event when Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler fart, because it's so hard for the UFC to go, yeah, tell you what, we'll put you in the main event, but shit, then how are we going to sell this? Because no one's going to want to watch it, especially in England. And it was funny, actually, because I actually bring up the guy I was speaking to. There's a group on Facebook that I follow. It's called UFC Fans UK and Ireland. There's 19,000 people in there, you bunch of fucking casuals. There were me and one guy called Nick. Literally, I promise you now, there were me and one guy called Nick. And the only reason I saw his comment is because he put on, fuck me, it's quiet tonight, where are all the fucking casuals? And I liked it, and I commented that, oh, it's because McGregor's not fighting tonight, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. And we're literally from, I think it was like the third or fourth fight in, me and him were just having a conversation on that Facebook page. And it was like, are you taking the piss? You bunch of, there were 90,000 people who were up. So that's basically my point. It's going to be hard for the UFC to get them 90,000 people off their horses to fight, to watch basically Amanda Nunes beat someone when they can just wake up the next day and go, right, Facebook, 2 minute clip, or she won again.
Yeah.
Oh, no surprise there. So it's good to have people like Cupcake back in the mix, doing what she's doing, and hopefully she can keep that go. She can keep that ball going.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'd love it to see her back at the top, not gonna lie.
Yeah, totally agree. I think it's good that she's back. I mean, the fact that it took her so long to become UFC champion and for her to be back, yeah, it's cool. But let's get into this main event. The person looking to take up the mantle of teammate and one of his best friends, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Islam Makhachev, essentially the lightweight boogeyman, because nobody wanted to fight him at all. Props to Thiago Moises for stepping up to take on the challenge. And you know what? He actually put in a really good performance. Lasted way longer in this fight than I thought he would. But ultimately, Makhachev did pick up the submission victory. First round was it was a lot of actually on the feet, which I'm actually surprised with, because obviously we know that Makhachev is part of that American top team, part of that Eagles fight club, where it's very much ground-based wrestling, sambo style. He doesn't actually score the first takedown until that. There's about a minute to go, and that's when he picks up Moises and essentially slams him. But in the 4 minutes build-up to that, he was actually, Makhachev was landing some really good shots, really kind of technically skilled with his hands, kind of matching Moises shot for shot. Second round, we actually see Moises go for the takedown. He lifts up Makhachev, drops him to the canvas, and then Makhachev, being that wily wrestler that he is, near enough grabs the neck and tries to go for the guillotine. But again, it was another round where Makhachev gets the takedown late in the round, was able to get that body lock, but was not enough time to really kind of work and get the submission. But what he did do really well was break down Thiago Moises. He knew that he could match him on the feet, but when it comes to the ground, that's where he knew his skill was so much better than Thiago Moises. So he had no kind of, he didn't have to rush. He didn't have to kind of like go for a submission what wasn't there. He knew he had the time and the patience to make sure that the submission was there and was easy for him to get. Didn't have to really kind of like stretch himself and put himself in too much risk, and that ended up coming in the fourth round when Moises tried to scramble from a takedown, but Makhachev was able to get straight back on top, turned and got the choke in, was able to roll Moises over and got the tap. A great performance by Moises. I've got to give him props. It takes a real brave person to take on this Islam Makhachev. I personally think we've got a dangerous contender in this lightweight division. But yeah, Makhachev picks up his ninth victory in the UFC.
You're definitely right when you say you've got a dangerous contender on our hands. This guy is... Now, actually, before I get onto him, like, obviously...
Moises.
Thiago Moises. I won't remember any of these names by the end of today. Thiago Moises, 26-year-old, comes in to fight. He's on McIntyre, who no one wants to fight. Props to him. He's an absolute beast. There were some points in that fight I thought, shit, he's got Islam's number here. Islam's that good that he basically proved me. He's just said, Carl, shut the fuck up and sit down. You know nothing.
It's the it's the patience with him, though. He doesn't rush.
He's so calm.
Yeah, that's it. He's so calm.
That's the good thing about him. The guy's 29. He's been with Khabib his full life, ever since school. He started at the age of 15. Khabib's dad trained them both. They literally have brought up like family, and then
well, they live like literally around the corner from each other.
Exactly, they were literally both brought up in Dagestan. Mm-hmm. That's their home country. But like the man's already just explained how the fight happened, so there's no point in going more into that. What I can go into though is coach Javier. He is one of the best coaches about in mixed martial arts. Him, AKA, is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I said the American top thing. I'm AKA. That's my bad.
Yeah, AKA. American Kickboxing Academy. Mm-hmm. That is him, isn't it? Yeah, it is, yeah. American Kickboxing Academy. With him, he knows that Khabib, Islam, Usman, he knows that all these lot can stand up. But then what's the point when they've got father's plan? What they've been training on their whole life?
Yeah.
What Khabib has basically built a legacy off and what Islam can do. And we've seen it time and time again. Islam can do it better than Khabib. He can do it in a mixed martial arts format way better than Khabib. His performance tonight looks a bit off. But I agree with someone Nick, all the casual people, the casual page who no one joined in. Nick, I was speaking to him and shout out, I don't know his last name, but Nick, this one's for you, I'll put it out there. Like he said, is he trying to make himself look shitter than he is or something? Or is he just trying to get people to fight him in the top 10? Because his performance didn't look like it was as sharp as it usually is.
That actually would make sense. If you're struggling to get someone to fight you, would you put in a weaker performance hoping to attract another fighter?
Well, you could do that because it makes sense and it is clever because like Daniel Cormier said, this kid is 29-year-old, but he is not at 100% yet and people don't want to fight him. So when do you want to fight him? At 100%? So
well, he went all the way through 2020 with no fight because nobody wanted to fight him.
He's a scary dude.
Before this fight, he fought Drew Dober, and he got the arm triangle sub in that fight. But yeah, before that was September 2019. Nobody wants to fight him. He's literally, you think Tony Ferguson is the El Kikui is the boogeyman? He's not. This guy is the boogeyman. People are terrified of fighting him. People don't pick up the phone if they think they're going to be in a fight with Makhachev. And a poor performance might get someone like Tony Ferguson thinking, yeah, do you know what? I'll take this fight. And then that's when Makhachev puts in the performance of his lifetime and destroys someone.
Well, that's it as well. People got to remember, it's not like the guy is worried about money or training or all like that. He's literally got family around him who's minted. He doesn't need to worry about that. He's literally training to come and take that belt off Oliveira. There is no doubt about that. You will see within the next 1.5 to 2 year, I will put money on it. He will be fighting for that belt. Even if it's just because no one wants to fight him and they've run out of people that Oliveira can beat. But he will fight for that belt one way or another. He's just too good. He's striking. He's up there with some of it. I wouldn't say he's the best, but he's striking, he's getting there. He's grappling. Well, what you can't complain about your grappling, you can't say anything.
Arguably one of the best in the world.
He's far from Khabib, he's the the best sambo wrestler to do it in mixed martial arts behind Khabib. He's got the potential to take over Khabib. So a lot of people,
I'd say, arguably maybe better than Khabib, because he was 4-time Russian national champion in sambo, multiple-time world champion, gold medalist in the 2016 sambo championships. This guy is scary good on the ground.
Yeah, this guy is serious. And what a lot of people are obviously debating on, when it goes back to the GOAT status of how can Khabib be GOAT? He's only been like 3 decent people, when you've got like John Bones Jones and stuff like that, beating people like the Otomachida, Shogun, Rashad, Gustafsson twice, DC twice, which is fair enough. But this guy could actually go on to beat all these people in the top 10, pick up that belt and keep it for a fair bit. He could literally be that Dagestani GOAT that everyone's saying Khabib. Now he's not, just because of who he's faced. He could sort of rewrite that history to go, well, no, we're still the best. It's just Khabib started it a little bit later than me. Khabib helped me start it when I was at this age. And it worked out perfectly for him. Now, obviously, like you said, it doesn't work out perfectly. Obviously, because they haven't got father's plan. They haven't got father there anymore. But then they have got Khabib. That's the good thing. They've still got that eagle in the corner. Even though they haven't got father, they've got a father figure. They've got
Yeah, and they've still got Umar still there, and Abdul is still there. So yeah, they've still got that Nurmagomedov base to work with.
Definitely. And that's all he needs to go off. He just needs to think into his head, what do I need to do? What do I need to get better? What do I need to get to that next step? And for me to say to him what you need to do is, I don't have a clue. Because he's just...
He just needs farts. He needs farts to climb the rankings.
Literally, that's all he needs to do. He needs farts. I don't know how many times I said, his striking's on point, his grappling's amazing. No one wants to fight him. And apart from his opponent tonight, who's 26, by the way, so that's a learning experience for him.
I mean, to put it in context, Islam was coming to this fight at rank 9. To get a fight, he had to take somebody who was outside the top 15.
And that's bad.
And then you're looking at Dos Anjos, not got a fight booked. Ferguson, not got a fight booked. We've obviously seen Conor and Poirier recently, but Michael Chandler, no fight booked. Beneil Dariush, no fight booked. Justin Gaethje, no fight booked. All them free to fight a top tenner, yet nobody's picked up the phone. Thiago Moises picked up the phone.
Well, that's it. I was thinking it was. So whilst I was waiting for this fight, I looked at it just to send it up. And obviously, you know why Conor and Dusty won. That makes totally sense. And I thought to myself, well, these are all these other people. And like someone said on Facebook or Twitter, I can't remember which it won, but they were saying, oh, but there's rumours going about that they could be Gaethje versus Chandler. Rumours, it hadn't happened yet, so why has no one accepted to fight this fight? The Islam's right there, right now. Yeah. You've got all these other guys who are killers, who are killers, physically killers, but yet they won't want to fight him.
I mean, there's 3 people in the top 5 that have got win streaks of 3 and above fights. He could have easily took one of those people on, but nobody's picked up the phone to him. It's as simple as that. And that's a shame, really, because this guy could be the world champion now if he'd have been able to have the fights. But unfortunately...
Well, that's it. Well, you either fight him now or you fight him when he's beat all these other people and he's got a title shot because no one will want to fight him. Mm-hmm. And then you've got no choice to fight him when he's got the belt. And you're like, shit, well, I didn't want to fight him before. And, well, now he's got the belt, I've got no choice, but I really don't want to fight him. So he's... Either way, you train your arms and you need to fight Islam at some point. Simple.
Absolutely. So next week we have got another fight night. This time it's Corey Sandhagen taking on Snaky McGee, TJ Dillashaw in the bantamweight. It's a very kind of a light weighted card. It's we've got a co-main event in the women's bantamweight, Aspen Ladd versus Mercy Chiazon, Carla Phillips against Raulian Pava, Darren Elkins and Derek Minna, and Macy Barber versus Miranda Maverick. So tune in next week to 5 Rounds to hear me and Carlos break that down. But thank you everybody who's who's watched along. Thank you, everybody who joined in from Twitter, from Facebook, from YouTube, and from Twitch. Go and follow Radio Techers and go and check out the amazing content there, including a video by Carlos here, who did a breakdown of weight cutting and its scientific benefits in MMA. Look out for that on Five Rounds After the Bell. There'll be plenty of content like that coming from Carlos in the coming weeks, so definitely keep an eye out for that. Go and follow the networks, Techers, Visionaries Global Media, and Chairshot. Follow me on Twitter at PopFiberMags. Follow Carlos here at KurtBate_Carlos. And follow Five Rounds on all social medias. If it's on Twitter, it'll probably be me. If it's everywhere else, it's definitely going to be Carlos. But yeah, thank you all for listening and watching along. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.